to Logically Local, the show that highlights local issues and solutions to sustainability problems.
In this globalized world, we believe that we need tailored local solutions for greater sustainability challenges. And Logically Local brings you stories from people, organizations, and communities who are doing their bit to contribute.
We are your hosts. I am Trisanki Saikya.
I'm Mayuri Phukan.
And today, we are going to talk about the slow movement and slow fashion with Priyanka Kaushik.
The slow movement advocates a cultural shift towards slowing down life's pace. It began in Rome in 1986 as a protest against the opening of a McDonald's restaurant and the fast food culture that it brings in. Over time, it developed to other areas related to slower lifestyle. In today's episode, we discuss this very interesting lifestyle and its associated components with Priyanka Kaushik.
Our guest today identified that the concept of slow living is not new to Northeast India, and there are many positives associated with this culture. Priyanka is a woman entrepreneur and an advocate for a slow lifestyle. She is from the small town of Jorhat in Assam. She was working with a fashion company in Mumbai, where among other things, she was managing the Lakme Fashion Week. She left her corporate job to shape her vision on slow fashion and build her current enterprises, Noi Mohi and Slowly Purvanchal. Let's talk to her to learn more about them.
Priyanka, can we talk about the relevance and importance of this slow fashion movement and slow lifestyle culture?
Hi, thank you so much for having me here today. I hope everyone is keeping safe and healthy. So, slow movement and slow fashion, we are talking about these concepts because they have gained momentum in the last few years after, as you mentioned, the protest took place in Italy in 1986, and it moved on to various different subcultures and areas of, you know, culture and lifestyle. For example, fashion, cinema, art, and cities and travel and what have you. In terms of slow fashion, in terms of Northeast, the perspective is very, very raw because we know as people from Northeast India, that's a very inherent quality to live a life where we value our ecosystem, where we value simplicity and minimalism. These are aspects of the slow movement. These are aspects of what it means to live life with a little bit of meaning and a little bit of purpose, with a little bit of awareness. So if you want to talk about slow, if you want to simply describe what it means to live life slowly, it just means to take a step back and then become aware of the choices that you make in your daily life. From the time you wake up in the morning to from the time you start having a cup of tea till the time you go into bed at night. What are the different million choices that you make? If you just take a step back and start thinking about it, then you make those choices with a little bit of awareness. And that is a very cultural thing, and not just as Northeastern, but also as Indian people or anybody, actually, if you really go deeper than that, as human beings, it's a very inherent and natural state of being for us to be in touch with our natural self, and then in that way to conduct our lives. So it is cultural revolution, as you said, against the fast culture of society, a society that has been built based on, more of survival instinct as opposed to spiritual instincts, or so to speak. So if you want to figure out a way where we have to understand how to bring forward a vision for the future in which where we as a generation or our previous generations or the current generations, future coming generations, have to take responsibility for the planet. And what are the things that we can do to give back to this planet or restore the planet and become custodians of the planet's resources, then we really must slow down and take steps accordingly.
Yeah, Priyanka, but I mean, it's funny when you talk about how the slow lifestyle comes inherently to us as humans, but it's also that in this modern lifestyle, we are taught to be fast, that constant movement, constant change, this is something we need to achieve, right? So this is something which the modern culture promotes, the fast lifestyle. And now you're talking about how actually inherently the people in Northeast or probably everyone is more suited for us to slow lifestyle. So I believe there's also an amount of learning and unlearning in this, that this current society tells us that we need to live in a certain way, consume a lot, consume fast fashion, consume fast food. It's very easily available to us. And while on the other hand, so much of our traditional knowledge and a traditional lifestyle is more about the slow lifestyle. So do you think that the slow movement is not new, but more of a revival, more of learning about things which were done earlier? Or is it, what do you think is new about this current form of movement?
You know, like you said, you're right. I mean, before today, earlier in the morning, I was talking about this. I had a session in which we were discussing this, where people were asking, it's actually good because, you know, I like to be lazy, so it works well for me, so I can slow down. But that's not what it really means to slow down. Slow down does not mean becoming lazy. Slow down does not mean becoming ineffective. It means you become more effective. It means that you become more active. When you slow down, essentially what you're doing is that you're becoming aware of the reasons and what the resources and the options and the choices that you have to make a decision about that particular task that you have taken. So you then become more effective. For example, if you take up slow movement in terms of food culture, if you're constantly rushing and then you want to just grab a Maggie or something, like a cup of noodles and make it, and then, yeah, it's fast and it's cheap, but then it doesn't fulfill your hunger, it's not nutritious, it's not benefiting you. So instead, if you just take a decision, like, why am I doing, if you do that constantly, that becomes a lifestyle. So you are surviving on Maggie all your life. But then if you take a step back and think about it, if I'm doing this every single day, it's not helping me. It's not natural for me to eat this food every single day, or, you know, more often than not. And you then become, you know, conscious about your, okay, what do I need to do? I need to grow, maybe, if possible, if I have the option, then I'll even grow my own food. If I'm not able to grow my own food, at least I cook a home-cooked meal and consume that. Or do I have the option of buying something that's healthier for me as an alternate brand of product, even if you want to just go and buy something? So you become conscious of your decision of what you want to make as a meal a habit for yourself, and then becomes a lifestyle approach. So when you think about it, it is not necessarily a new or an old concept. I mean, it's just that because of the overproduction and overconsumption and like you said, conditioning of how we have been brought up, from the time we brought up, we've only been thinking about consuming and consuming without thinking about why we're consuming so much and what is the point of it all, right? We don't think, we just do it on autopilot. That conditioning, that unlearning is a very big task, and it happens, and it is happening quite a lot. Actually, there is a big shift in consciousness, for so to speak, where people are becoming aware of what they're consuming in terms of thoughts, in terms of products, in terms of brands. Like, if you're sad, there's a habit of going into retail therapy. There's something called retail therapy because, you know, it makes you joyful instantly. That instant fix, it's not a long-term solution, because after you've got that, you want something else. It's basically nothing but the dopamine hit that you keep getting used to every time you get quick results, and it is not doing any good. So here is the alternate option, is to become aware of what you're consuming, starting from the thoughts that you consume to the products that you consume. And then when you do that more and more, there it becomes a habit. Like, for example, you wake up in the morning and have a cup of tea. It's your regular thing. But then if you become, like, you know, conscious of something so simple and something so small, you say that, okay, I want to have a cup of tea that's free of pesticides. So you go hunting for a brand that will at least tell you that, okay, this is an organic tea. Because first thing in the morning, if you do that, then it better be good for you. It's not saying that you mustn't have tea because it's not good for you. We are not talking about that. We are talking about how you make decisions consciously and how you choose wisely about whatever it is that you do. And slowly and slowly, you will see that your lifestyle is changing. Slowly you see that, okay, things that you would like consider doing, like retail therapy, then you start becoming aware that maybe there is human tragedy associated to that. Then that's no longer therapy for you. Then, you know, you become more aware, and then you say, okay, let me not do that. Let me deal with whatever it is that I'm doing. I don't need a quick fix so often. So that is a very fundamental shift, and it's not new or old, or even, like you're saying, reviving. It's just that this has become popular now because every culture has gone through this time and again. Through periods where, you know, history repeats itself in cycles. So I suppose it's one of those things, but it's certainly not a new concept. It's just that we are reconnecting with our natural selves. We are more and more so with the situation that we are in right now. We are questioning a lot of things. We are reflecting upon a lot of things. And as a group, we are growing in this direction, which is wonderful.
Right. I certainly agree on that. And on a topic of conscious consumption, which you mentioned, could you tell us more about your work and your initiatives, especially Noi Mohi and Slowly Purvanchal?
Yeah, definitely. So Noi Mohi evolved as a result of my own journey as a person. I was working in Bombay for many years. I was doing fashion weeks there. I was very much engaged in the mainstream fashion business. And then I was living in Bombay. And then I met somebody from Germany. And she introduced me to slow fashion, which is quite an irony because I'm from Northeast India. And I had to learn about slow fashion through a German because that's how it is. Like I said, I mean, a lot of people from childhood are conditioned to thinking in a certain way. It doesn't matter the resources you have at your disposal. And then when I went through that journey of exploring slow fashion and what it meant, I went into villages in Rajasthan and was working with artisans there, scorching heat in May and June, July months in Rajasthan. So that became a very big learning for me about understanding of what it means, about consumerism. The fundamental idea of consumerism needs to be changed in some way, or I at least want to be a part of that in some way, shape or form. And then I came back around to my roots in Northeast, and I saw the silk hung in a museum, at a museum, and it was just standing there tall, grand, and beautifully, and I was just drawn to it. All my life, I thought airy silk was a piece of silk that old people use when they're sick, because all the time you see in the sand that old people have a white color shawl around themselves, and then they do just, it's a very normal thing, and I didn't think it was an exquisite piece of silk until I saw it at the museum hung like that. And then I explored. At this time, I've already understood what slow fashion is, and I was able to connect it more and more because I'm seeing it. Like, oh, but I've seen my grandmother use this. I've seen my grand aunt use this. I know what this silk is. And I went on to exploring and traveling length and breadth of Assam, and then met all these beautiful artisans in remote villages in Assam. And each household, wherever I went, I saw that they have a handloom in their home. And, we call it Tatkhal in Assam, in Assamese. And each one of them are, like, even the young girls are trained on how to use it. So I was fascinated by it, and I was drawn. And then eventually Noi Mohi evolved from there when I continued on that journey and started co-creating products with them. So at Noi Mohi, although it's an organization where we sell products at a premium rate, but it is not necessarily a designer brand. It's not about the designer. It is about co-creating with the artisans, taking into account the different traditional gifts that have been passed on to us by our ancestors, and we have inherited them beautifully. So there is a whole, there are processes of design that we, encourage. We encourage our artisans to come up with the ideas. And and sometimes they're not even aware that they have actually given us the idea of sari, because all they are doing is just standing against a wall and listening to a conversation and wearing something very simple. And that has translated into a really gorgeous piece at Noi Mohi.
So it focuses on empowerment of the local artisans.
Yes, it does. It does, definitely. I mean, it's empowerment in the sense that the artisans, they also, like us, when we were growing up, have also kind of been conditioned into thinking that they are not good enough, or what they know, they need to be trained further, or they need to do something else, right? Like they don't want to use adhesives because that's not really, making them too much profit. They want to make the polyester fibers because that's selling faster. So they're losing their own skills or their own thinking, their own ideas of what is actually valuable. In the process of there's a whole web of that conditioning that you're talking about. It's there, seeped right there into every sector of our existence, and that's what's happening with the artisans also. So for me to go there, and then I had to take them to the museum and show them, let's see, look at this silk, like, oh yeah, it's beautiful, we can do it, it's very easy and simple for us to do, like, yeah, that's what it is, that's what we need to do, that's what we need to make. And then they feel, oh yeah, that's good, I can do this, and I they feel good about themselves. And they feel like, okay, I already know this, so maybe what I have to offer is valuable enough. So if that's what's empowerment, then definitely. But, to be honest, Trusanki, a lot of the times I feel like I don't know if I'm empowering them or they're empowering me, because every day is a journey.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear that it's not a one-way process, that you acknowledge the knowledge transfer which happens from the other way around as well. And you stress, I mean, empowerment was something I used, but I liked your word better, which was co-creation, which just focuses more on working together rather than, you know, being a sort of a benefactor or just a one-way process of helping others or something.
Yeah.
And no, yeah. I mean, I really like the word co-creation more than empowerment.
Yeah, and they are also aware of what's happening in the organization. For example, my Instagram page, you will see that there's a little story about the artisan that has made the product. And there is a little message from the artisan on the label itself in Assamese language, in her words, that goes out to the consumer at the end. So she feels like, okay, I have so much more to offer. And then I ask her, please give me a message from my buyers, and she's like, what do I say? Like, just tell me like the care information for this. And she has instructed the consumer, like, please, when you buy this product, this is how you take care of it. And her name is there, her message is there, and she feels like, okay, I'm doing something more. I think it all boils down to connections and connecting with yourself and connecting with like-minded people, connecting with, you know, that kind of ecosystem that allows your growth spiritually as well as individually. That is the process of co-creation. I think I'm very happy that I've been able to experience this in this journey.
But how has been the response of the consumers, the buyers who buy from Noemohi? And is it accessible to everyone? Or would you say that, because fast fashion is cheap, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that perhaps Noemohi has a slightly higher price range than what we buy from H&M or something.
Yeah.
And it might not be accessible to everyone, right?
Well, that is a very common misunderstanding that people have, and you ask the right question, because I'd be glad to clarify this. When you say a product is expensive and or you determine the pricing of the product, like if you buy 10 tops for 2,000 rupees or 3,000 rupees or whatever, for that matter, like a dress, and just giving a ballpark figure of that much, if that's supposed to be cheap, then as opposed to you buying a piece of fabric that will last you for 200 years for 2,000 or 3,000 rupees, like 1,100 to 2,000 rupees a meter, for example, and you make your own whatever you want to make a tunic out of it or a dress, that'll last you for 200 years. That will give you a condition in which you will be able to, breathe in the sense that there is, eco-friendly fibers there. So you are able to, your skin is able to breathe. There's no static there, as opposed to when you're wearing a polyester fabric garment or something. And then you also, in the process of doing something like that, you are creating an impact by doing something for a small brand, like whether it's a subscale brand or, when I say small, I mean the size of the brand. If you contribute to that, then you are actually connecting with an artisan who's made your clothes. So you're able to attach a value of empathy or some kind of emotion to the product. So you don't want to throw it away, because you know how it has been made, in which village it has been made, and what are the things that went into making it. And you enjoy wearing it because it feels great, and why would you want to throw it away? So you maintain it and you take care of it for so long, and then you actually want to, then you want to price it. When you think about the pricing, then it makes sense to buy a product for that much price. And you don't have to buy 10, 20 tops. At Noemohi, what we do is that we are, because we mostly make unstitched products, we don't do stitched products, so we do a lot of sarees and mekhela chadars and things like that. So from the mekhela sadar concept, we have offered this to our consumers. We call it the two-piece saree. So they can buy a mekhela or the skirt, and they can mix and match with multiple sadar. So the wardrobe size has increased, so they can go out wearing something different every single day. But they have actually reduced their budget, and then they're also contributing in the sense that they're connecting with nature, they're connecting with the world at their own little contribution, educating themselves about how their fabric and the clothing are made. And that's a difference that they're creating in the process. So the buying process becomes so much more than just buying, or consuming. Yeah, so when you put a price to it, then it's actually quite cheap if you think about it.
Yeah, and I think it gives a lot of insight into conscious consumption, which you spoke about. Yes, Mayuri, please go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that we have been conditioned to believe in last, let's say, a decade or two that we need a new cloth or a new piece of clothing for every new occasion, every new day. And that's why it has also kind of encouraged us buying multiple, let's say, tops, like you said, for 10 tops for 3,000 rupees, like you said. So there is more of wear and throw kind of concept going on. So it's really nice to see a shift wherein we value the pieces that we buy. We buy consciously and invest our money being conscious of people who are creating that fabric, creating that clothing. It's really nice to see this shift coming in.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's always a choice, right? That you make that choice about whether you want to go for 10 tops or if you want to go for one quality product, which has also an attachment in terms of who's making it and where the inputs are coming from.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's always about the choice.
Yeah, and it's not just about buying something from an artisan and then you become like a sustainable consumer or a slow fashion consumer, but you can also always upcycle what you've already got. You can recycle what you've already got. There are many ways. The first step is to become conscious that your actions have a certain impact on the planet and on the other individuals and other things and your surroundings. Like, you know about the butterfly effect, right? Like if the butterfly flaps its wings somewhere in another continent, there is an effect that is felt in another one. So it is not that we exist in isolation. And also it is no longer a luxury. If there are some fundamental big time crises that have dawned upon us, like for example the water crisis. Now there's so much water is wasted in making clothes. There is while dyeing, whether you want to when you use chemicals, there is another kind of pollution going on. There are different kinds of crises that you have to think about as human beings and as custodians of this planet, right? Like we have to start taking responsibilities for our own planet. Now, it's not that it is happening tomorrow. This water crisis is already there. In places like Chennai, there is no water. In India, it has already hit. There are places like Africa, in Europe, there are so much of this is already going on. If you read more about it, you will get scared. I mean, this is a reality and we are so distracted by our pettiness. What will people say if I repeat a clothing article? You don't have to think like that when you are actually you need to start becoming more aware of how you can be confident about who you are, and who you are does not have to be about what you're wearing. That is the whole fundamental change in consumerism and that shift that you were talking about, that it doesn't matter who we are wearing, who has made your clothes. That is more important than who we are wearing. Like, you know, that perception has to change, but it can become more important things to deal with. I'm not saying anything against fashion. I love fashion. I'm all biased for fashion. But I'm also a minimalist. I have stopped buying clothes big time. I don't remember the last time I actually bought some. So it's important to realize, and when you think about it, for example, if you make a cotton, even if you are wearing organic clothing, say cotton shirt, sometimes they will use thousands and thousands of liters to make a piece of shirt, right? And then you can imagine what happens to polyester fabrics and fibers. So if you use natural fibers, in that also there are options that you will have to then pick and choose. And you become very conscious of, okay, maybe 20 liters of water versus 2,000 of liters, 20,000 liters of water. So you have, then you automatically don't want to buy that. You know, you have to become responsible for what you're consuming. And it is going to affect us, all of us. It's not a matter of, if, it's a matter of when.
Yeah, going ahead with the concept of having a conscious decision about the X we do and the decisions we take. Let's also talk about your venture, which is Slowly Purvanchal. We were talking about it earlier and it seemed very interesting. And the Unrush concept that you're currently working on.
Yes, I'm very, very, very happy that when I came back to Northeast, I came in touch with all the different, gifts that we have in Northeast. Every household has something very beautiful and something. Every time I would go and visit a household, there is hospitality that you have to experience that is so selfless and so honest and raw. And then there is food that you will see that is so, again, all about flavor and not so much about spices necessarily, but it's very flavorsome and it's very enjoyable. So there are a lot of gifts that we in the region of Northeast India have been gifted with. The biodiversity, the bio cover, the natural green cover, as they say, is in Northeast is 55%. in the entire country. If you go by statistics, 43% of the weavers in the entire country reside in Assam. So there's something right that people of Northeast are doing to preserve these beautiful cultural habits. So Slowly Purvanchal is an extension of the slow movement that we talked about earlier, but from the perspective of Northeast and what we have to offer from the region to contribute in that movement. And Slowly Purvanchal therefore becomes a movement where we talk about the lifestyle approach of slow living through examples of the gifts of Northeast India. So here we do a lot of, we connect with young leaders, we connect with people who are interested to know about things. So sometimes people who are from Northeast are always kind of struggling with so many different things. If you really go deep down into it, then you think about all the issues that people are suffering with, starting from identity crisis, that you want to aid somebody else, and then you struggle with that also because you're not doing a better job of it. And then you come back to who you are, and then you're not doing a good job of being who you are also. So there is a struggle constantly. So Slowly Purvanchal is that one platform or movement where we create awareness of the benefits and the values of Northeast India and how people should not feel like they lack something and they should become proud of, you know, or proud of their own region and what they have to offer, and they don't need to feel like, okay, you know, I need to get out of Northeast India, or I need to go to Bombay, I need to go to a bigger city to become something. Instead, what we are encouraging people through these campaigns and all the campaigns that we conduct through Slowly Purvanchal is that we make people aware of their own strengths, of their own culture in Northeast India. So that's one thing we are doing, and that you talked about Angrush. So through that, another program that we have created is that we invite people from urban setups to come into, we've been working in peri-urban areas and certain villages there, where we work with the tribal lot or people who are, you know, preserving their cultures and keeping it together. So we invite people from urban setups and ask them to come and spend a day with us, in which they experience how to take check the pace of their lives. They can take a step back and unrush in that moment and experience, you know, something about themselves in the process. So it becomes a very, you know, the process of reconnecting with yourself. So whether it is a trek, going in a trek, but it provides a little bit of uniqueness in that it's not a conventional trekking. It could be a forest path at night, for example, and you're connecting with your surroundings and your trees at night, and then you're just soaking up the forest and then thinking and then connecting with the group altogether. So that that really brings massive, massive change in the way they want to live their lives fundamentally. Because they're always running after something, and then what they realize is that they're running after the wrong things. So this is one example. Then there are other things we do in Unrush, is that we invite them when they come and join us. We invite them in cooking slow food, for example. So the food is cooked using bamboo, bamboos and, you know, natural resources, and we invite them to be part of it. So it's a very, like, you know, you lose everything in that time, and then you become part of this process and this experience, that eventually the objective of which is to connect you to yourself, and then, you know, that this slow living becomes a part of it. So it's basically sowing a seed of this slow culture into the fast-paced lifestyle.
We have already established that advocating for slow movement is not the same as being lazy, right? But while involving other people and trying to talk to them about this slow culture, aren't there some challenges that comes up now and then? So what are these barriers which you have faced or you have seen while advocating slow movement under this current fast fashion lifestyle?
Yes, it's true. So that is the first thing, that unlearning becomes a big challenge, because it doesn't matter if you're from Northeast, doesn't matter you're from the most, like, the greenest of the greenest of places, but the conditioning is so deeply rooted that you're always struggling and you're always exploring. So I don't prescribe anybody, I don't tell people that you need to live like this. My objective is to help them explore the different options and also kind of really connect to who they are as people. So what happens in our programs is that the first step is to unlearn what they have learned through experience. So we invite them into certain you know, processes, like, for example, touching the earth, like soil therapy or something like that, or an assignment. So if you're talking to young students and they've got 10 assignments to do. We tell them in that 10 assignments, you need to make sure that you also do the 11th one. But this 11th one has to be done when you have to connect to, say, like you have to use soil, or you have to use cow dung or something very natural, where they have to connect with nature. And then they feel like, but madam, how do we do that? Run around, so much is to be done. And then they say, okay, but we did it and it was so joyful that all the 10 things that they had to do in the day became easier the next day. So they realize that, okay, it's not about actually running after grades and scoring the highest. It's about learning how to deal with failure, because tomorrow, the future is a very different kind of future that we are not even thinking, or nobody is teaching us about. We have to prepare ourselves and we have to prepare ourselves in a way that we are developing our life skills more than achieving grades, etc. So when we're connecting with the younger lot, who are students, for example, or studying social entrepreneurship, etc., these are the ways that we deal with. And so first day is always a challenge because they resist it. But when is the time? But they, once they do it, they will not stop doing it in the next 3-4 days. It's a 3 to 5 day program that we engage them in. And then I get tired from the time we finish the session from 8 o'clock in the night, from morning till 10, 11 in the night. We will keep getting messages, WhatsApp group messages, where they would have sent a picture of what they did that day. Then suddenly they start taking life not so seriously. And then they want to focus more on joy than to rush around scoring highest scores or grades for that matter. So that has been a challenge. And then other challenges again, where is the access to, when the best way to connect people with what we are talking about is when they are in touch with, say, nature. But where is nature now in that urban setup? It's very difficult. That's also another challenge. So when I tell them to come and touch the soil or play with something, make some seed bombs or things like that. You had visited the farm, you know about the seed bomb concept, for example. But where do they have the access to the raw materials and things like that? So that's also another challenge. So what happens is that more often than not, when you're trying to solve one problem, you have to solve 10 other problems in the process. So therefore, Slowly Purvanchal evolved also. It was not that Slowly Purvanchal was an intentional thing. We wanted to do something else, but we realized that we have to first do this and then can we do something. So that's how we are dealing with the challenges.
Okay, so we come to the last segment of our podcast. And since in this podcast we discuss sustainability, we want our guests to end with a sustainable choice that they consciously follow in their daily lives. So can you tell us about a practice or an activity which you consciously do every day to make your life more sustainable?
I am a very yoga person. I like to do yoga practices and things like that. But that's not to say that everybody, it's like, it's for each individual should explore how they want to explore their journey to themselves in their own way. But I enjoy doing yoga a lot. It helps me to calm down a little bit and to think and to kind of really breathe in. My environment, my ecosystem, my thoughts, what I need, what I don't. So it helps me. But essentially, in terms of lifestyle also, I think I have become a minimalist consciously. I don't remember buying things. Like, I don't buy things unnecessarily. I upcycle, recycle. And most of the times when I do have an occasion or have to go somewhere, then I make sure that I make my own clothing. Not just because I have Noemohe, my own product, but I pay attention to what I consume. So I'm a minimalist in that sense, because I like to practice that. And I am not, people say that I have a good sense of dressing, etc., and I enjoy dressing up, but then I also dress up, I'm able to do that, keeping my minimalistic principles in place. So I enjoy doing that. I like to present it to the world in that way, myself in that way. So that's one. Those are the two things that I do. And also then the other thing again, like, you don't have to become drastic in anything, which is like another thing that it all started with that one cup of tea example I was giving you earlier. Is that, I started enjoying a cup of, my favorite time is that me enjoying a cup of tea in the morning. So, you know, even if you're having that one cup of tea and then you're enjoying it and you become aware, like, what are you having it? Are you having it in a plastic cup or even a terracotta mug? Or are you sitting in a place surrounded by flowers or plants, or are you having it in a little space? So that becomes a ritual, and then that little thing will open up a Pandora's box, and then there's a whole cycle. It opens up a chain reaction of sorts, and then you explore life like that. So these are things, small little things that I pay attention to every single day, and I like to conduct my life like that.
Thank you, Priyanka, for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
We reflected quite a bit on conscious thinking and connecting with our intergenerational learning and taking some time to slow down. It was really interesting.
Yes, it was a lot of fun, and I enjoy talking about this. I'm really, really happy that you invited me here today, and I'd love to meet you guys in person when I'm back in the farm. We'll discuss more about the Unleash program. You can come and see and experience it yourself.
Definitely, we'd love to, and all the best with both your initiatives.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day. Stay safe. Yes.
Bye-bye.